Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Nice to meet you, Stanley. Mr. Gray shook the 5-year-old's hand solemnly. I guess your dad told you that I work with him, but we also play basketball together at the community center. Do you like to play basketball?
Is that car yours or does it belong to another member of your family? Stanley inquired.
It's mine. Why do you ask? Mr. Gray was puzzled.
Because if I asked you questions about it and it didn't belong to you, you might not know the answers, Stanley replied.
Raising his eyebrows, Mr. Gray looked at Stanley's dad. Hey, son, what'd you want to know? He asked.
Well, for starters, Stanley began, how frequently does a car like this need the brake cylinders checked?
Mr. Gray looked pained. I'm not sure. I guess it depends on how many miles I drive.
Of course, stop-and-go traffic is harder on brake linings than highway driving, Stanley noted. Do you happen to have the owner's manual with you?
Stanley's dad gave his friend a look of resignation and patted his son on the shoulder.
How about we all go inside now? I bet Mom's got dinner nearly ready.
How about oil changes? Do you use a premium-grade oil? You know, there are some new kinds that actually clean the engine.
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about Asperger's syndrome in children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest works with groups of children and adults who have Asperger's syndrome. Beulah Levy was a social worker in her native South Africa and now works in the U.S. with children, adolescents, and adults, both individually and in groups. She is with the Jewish Social Service Agency in the metropolitan Washington, D.C. area. She also has a private practice and has talked with us before. She has 2 grown children, a son and a daughter. Welcome back to Parents' Perspective, Beulah.
Thank you.
How can a parent tell if a child has Asperger's syndrome?
There are some basic things that you always see with Asperger's children. There's a lack of social skills, an inability to have a reciprocal conversation, as we're having right now. There's just no reciprocity in the talking. And also an intense interest in a particular subject, such as the little guy who wanted to talk about his cars. That's very typical of children with Asperger's. Until 50 years ago, we never heard of Asperger's syndrome. And then Hans Asperger, who was Viennese, diagnosed this disorder. And since then, slowly we've developed more and more diagnostic criteria, and we're able to diagnose these children and help them. They're usually isolated at school, a few friends. They don't seem to be able to read body language and get social cues from other kids. And they make comments that are true, but so inappropriate. For example, recently I was in a checkout line, and a teenager, quite a large young man, commented loudly, "That person in front is really big." And his mom said, "You shouldn't say that. It's not appropriate." And he turned and in a very loud voice said, "But he really is big." Missing the whole point of the social connection and what was appropriate, they just really don't pick up on what they should say and what they should do. I have a list of things, maybe this is helpful for parents that struggle with wondering if their kids have this disorder. So I'm going to just make a few points. The one is they have lack of empathy, and that doesn't mean they don't care. They might like other children, but they can't pick up what another child's feeling. Mm-hmm. They can't read the emotions. That doesn't mean they don't care about them, though. But it's the empathy, the understanding of the emotion that seems to be really hard for these kids.
So it's something that works both when they're relating to adults and to peers.
Oh, yes. They're completely self-absorbed. There tends to be a very strong absorption with what's going on in themselves, their own feelings, rather than being able to pick up what anyone else is. They have an inability to form friendships. They look the same as others, and they have normal or above-normal intelligence. But for some inexplicable reason, they're unable to relate to other children of their same age or same group or their peers. They just can't seem to relate to them. Hans Asperger said that young children with an Asperger syndrome don't seem motivated to know how to get on with other kids, and even sometimes panic if we force them to be in a group. They just don't feel comfortable with a group of other kids. Not all. Some don't feel comfortable. Everybody, many of these kids are slightly different, but it can be very intimidating. They're the kids you see alone on the playground when everyone else is playing, the child who wanders alone. And there's a great book by Tony Atwood in which he tells a story about a kid who, when asked why he didn't play with other children, replied, "No, thank you, I don't have to." Oh. Again, missing the nuance in the structure. One mother told about when her son was in a baseball team, she was watching them play, and one little kid was about to make a home run, and the entire team was cheering him on. He was just near the end, and she looked at her son, who was standing without emotion on the side, watching a butterfly.
Oh.
Kind of thing that you see in these children. Another thing is the one-sided conversations. A client of mine tells a story, and the mailman was coming by, and the son ran out to meet the mailman, and the mailman was about to say hello, and the son started talking about diesel trains.
Oh.
No interaction with the mailman, no understanding that this man wanted to move on and was completely disinterested in diesel trains. The kid went on until eventually the mailman stopped him and said, "Goodbye, I have to go." The kid did not pick up on the inappropriateness, the inability to connect, the inability to pick up the cues that the mailman really didn't care about, which is, again, the little guy that you spoke about in the beginning with the car. They just don't pick up. They have this absorption in some special interest. They don't pick up tone of voice. They don't pick up body language. The teacher who stands with her arms crossed and glares at the kids, everybody else knows what that means. Not a child who has Asperger's syndrome. Or the teacher has a glint in her eye and a tone of voice to say, "I'm teasing you." They don't understand that. They get pretty upset. Or when she's tapping her foot on the ground with impatience, they miss the whole connection and will continue doing exactly what they're doing and then kind of get into trouble. The saying things that offend people, not intentionally, but because they don't understand the social rules. They don't understand the rules of conduct. And so will say things that are particularly hurtful. They're rule-bound. They obey rules completely. And I have a little kid in my group who's wonderful to work with because whatever I tell him to do, he tries so hard. He works incredibly hard, but gets very upset when other kids don't follow the rules. If I say to them, "Let's sit with your legs crossed," and the kids start lying around with their legs on the floor, he gets very upset. He said the rule is to sit with your legs crossed. He's very rule-bound. And I've heard from a teacher once, she turned her back to the class to write on the board, and someone in the class got up and clowned around, and everybody roared with laughter, and she turned around and she said, "Who did that?" And the whole class was silent. The kid with Asperger's said, "Johnny did it."
Uh-huh.
Completely oblivious that this was not appropriate and didn't even get the glares of the other kids in the class. So that's sort of the kinds of things we see in these kids, the kinds of things parents might pick up or notice in their kids.
It almost seems that there's a gene lacking, doesn't it?
There
the
is
interaction
some, there
gene.
There is some research on the genetic piece of it, that it is genetic. But again, there's other information that it could be a virus. We really don't have all the answers. But it is a neurological deficit.
Beulah, how would you say Asperger's is related to and different from autism?
Asperger's is along the autism spectrum. It's called a spectrum disorder. Many people refer to Asperger's syndrome as high-functioning autism. I think they're probably the same thing, that diagnosis, high-functioning autism. These children are different from children who are autistic in that they want to make friendships and want the relationships. Children with autism really don't have an interest. They tend to be so involved in their own issues and in their interests and in themselves that they don't seek out social relationships. But I think people with Asperger's actually seek out friendships. The other difference is that children with Asperger's disorders tend to be higher functioning. They have normal or above normal intelligence. Children with actual autism tend to be developmentally delayed, not all of them, but they tend not to be as high functioning intellectually as children with Asperger's. But okay, it's along the spectrum.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on Asperger's syndrome.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with licensed clinical social worker Beulah Levy about children with Asperger's syndrome. At what age do these symptoms usually appear? Are children born with these symptoms, or do they finally develop at a certain point? When do they begin to rear their heads?
I've read that they appear in the first 3 years of life. But parents are telling me that kids as young as 6 or 8 weeks, they notice things. You know, there's no eye contact. The game of peekaboo that we always play with little babies, they don't do that. They don't long for the connection. The way that game is, kids like the connection. They look for their mom or they look for the person playing with them. But the child with Asperger's syndrome doesn't necessarily want that contact. And so they often don't play that game. I've also heard parents talk about concentrating intensely at a young, young age. You know those little black and white mobiles and pictures we tend to have for little kids? Well, they stare at them for hours on end, much longer than we notice that most kids do. And if the parents try to distract them or take them away from that, they get pretty upset, cry a great deal, often temper tantrums and screaming and crying when the parents try and stop that. And this is at really young age. So I'm hearing parents noticing differences at very, very young age. They have a special toy that they love, a rattle or something with a color, and don't want to play with anything else, completely absorbed in one thing. Crying a lot, meltdowns. All kids have meltdowns. All kids have temper tantrums. But I'm hearing parents say at young ages, they're seeing more and more of the meltdowns for no provocation at all. A lot of inability to control emotions and feelings.
It almost sounds like it's that much more important for parents to recognize what is on the normal scale, if you use that term, so that you can recognize what is not following a pattern that you'd see in most other children.
And the scary part, I think that's a great idea, is a lot of pediatricians and doctors are so scared to diagnose this at a young age. You know, kids change, kids development. When do you actually make a diagnosis? When you know, many parents have told me, they were told over and over again, your kid is fine, they'll grow out of it, it's just a stage. Well, some of them don't.
And sometimes they're going to be happier people if they get help sooner.
The sooner you start, the more you can teach. And you really, really can teach social skills. We did a series of lectures to teachers, and then we did some for parents. And at the end of the lecture, a man came to me, and he said he had a 14-year-old daughter who had trouble with social skills, and he wanted to get her in a group. And he said, I have to tell you, I have the same problem. And never knew that anybody could ever teach me to say the right thing and what to do. And just hearing that makes this one of the most important lectures I've ever heard, because I realized that I could have been taught and still can be. I just remember it because it's very touching.
It is
hearing
very touching,
that from a father who now has a daughter who's struggling with this issue.
This is very hopeful in the sense that even social cues or things that we take for granted that we don't even think about can be taught systematically to children.
Yes, yes. So now, some of it has a rigid feel when you teach it because they don't, but you know what? They're just so much better and so much more comfortable if you can teach them.
If a parent is noticing that a child is not relating to other people, is not making eye contact, that to me would be blatant right from the beginning, because that's my favorite thing when you have a little new baby and it begins to learn to focus and look at you.
Right.
What's the first thing you would suggest if you're noticing something that isn't quite what you're seeing in other people's babies?
I would say you really need to have your child assessed by someone who's a very good diagnostician, a clinician who can diagnose this. And I think that's really, really important. Find out what's going on. And as I said, a lot of doctors are reluctant to do this in very young babies, but there are people who are diagnosing and picking up this in very young kids.
How would you find such a person if your pediatrician says, oh, he's fine, he'll outgrow it?
Children's hospitals are a good place to begin.
You're a good example. You're a social worker, and someone could call a social service agency.
Yes,
I would
yes.
think.
And their websites, mm-hmm. where they will recommend or name people or organizations. They're support groups for parents, and people do know how to find people who can diagnose. But once you pick it up, I think there are other important things, like, what do you do with your kid? Mm-hmm. So you have
now
a diagnosis.
What?
Now what do you do? Social skills groups. And I guess I'm passionate about it because this is what I do. There are lots of things you need to do, but for me, that is a number one issue because these kids have a lack of social skills.
But if you're dealing with a child who's a toddler, they're probably not up to social skills groups yet, so what do you do as a parent?
Well, as a parent, there are a lot of things you can teach your kid. I mean, you can teach your kid lots of things. Eye contact. You can play games. Every time your child looks at you when they talk, a sticker, a reward. Tell them how great they are. Reinforce this. Teach them those skills. Teach them. Watch other kids of the same age. Have a look at what 3-year-olds or 4-year-olds or 5-year-olds, for that matter, do. Watch how they play. And Take those skills and teach them to your kid. Or when you have a kid over to play, watch what they do wrong. And then go back and try and teach your kid how to do those things because they don't know naturally. It's interesting. I was in California recently visiting a relative, and she has a six-year-old little boy. And she said her son had a friend in the class who had Asperger's syndrome, and the mother had hired a play coach. I've not heard of this before. No. Who makes social contacts arrangements, calls the kids in the class, invites one child over, provides a structured activity, is around to make sure that it's a successful play date, and teaches as she observes. And that's, she comes several days a week and organizes play for this young kid. And I thought, what a wonderful idea for somebody who doesn't have the skills to do that all the time or with her own kid.
It sounds like with these children, one-on-one play dates is a much better idea than several other kids together.
I think that's true. And I would say keep them short and keep them structured. Make sure it's a success. End it before there's an explosion. But there are other important things. These kids are rigid, and maybe they like to play a game this specific way. Perhaps mom needs to help them understand that it's okay to do things a different way, that there isn't only one way to do things. That's really hard for these kids. So mom has a great role, and I don't know how moms have the time and the energy, and it's pretty tough to constantly be teaching. And so that's where the social skills groups come in, perhaps with children as young as 5 or 4. I wouldn't go much younger with groups, even though they can be play, because really we teach through play in groups anyway. Everything is play and fun.
Well, we've talked about Asperger's kids being in nursery school and preschool and so forth. What happens when these kids arrive in school? That's really a tall order to keep the peer relationships in good shape.
You know, I don't think there's a specific school or a specific setup that meets everybody's needs. These children have a variety of needs, and each child is a little different. So maybe it's not the specific school that's important. Maybe we need to look at the kind of classroom, that it's structured, that it has some kind of routine in the classroom. The classroom is structured. It's not too big. It's not one of these open plan classrooms. Important is perhaps having an IEP for your child, individualized education plan for your child, so they can get the resources they need. Very often an aide in the classroom who can help them interact, perhaps one-on-one, or help them interact as a group is really helpful for these kids. And the teacher.
And getting that label.
Getting that label is difficult. Mm-hmm. And getting the individualized education plan. But that enables goals. And most of the goals for these kids are social goals. How to help the kid interact with others, help him on the playground. So that aid in the classroom is important. But also the teacher, the personality, the teacher who has a warmth but still a structure, whose emotions are probably pretty stable, that the kids know what to expect from her. Being a teacher with children with Asperger's is so challenging. And I think it really needs to be a very special kind of teacher that makes this work calm disposition, predictable, flexible, but encouraging and warm, plays a big role. So again, there's nothing specific. Some kids are in special schools, but a lot of the kids are in a regular mainstream classroom with assistance.
It's interesting. We see in normal kindergarten classrooms and sometimes lower elementary school classrooms, the teacher has made a chart on the wall. At 9 o'clock, we're going to do this. At 9:30, we're going to do that, and so forth. And it seems very, very structured, but I think there's a comfort level for kids to know what to expect, what's going to happen, what's going to happen.
Important.
And with Asperger's kids who are so uncomfortable with themselves and very uncomfortable being around other people, the idea of routine and being able to know what the expectations are must be
it
very
really
comforting.
It's a sense of security. It gives them a structure and security, mm-hmm. and so it makes it very much easier for them.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on Asperger's syndrome.
For an audio cassette copy of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with licensed clinical social worker Beulah Levy about children with Asperger's syndrome. If you could give parents of Asperger's kids one piece of advice for starters, what would that be?
Perhaps to take care of yourself and know that your child can't help the way they are. This is a neurological condition, and these kids can't help it. Take care of yourself. Find yourself a support group. Have other parents to talk to. Find resources from other parents. When you're feeling isolated and alone out there, find somebody to help you with this. It's really difficult, and being part of that group or support system. I run groups for parents, both support and parenting skills, and they really are very helpful. Just for example, how do these parents deal with the loss of not having a child who's like everybody else's child? They need someone to talk to about that. The concerns about the child's future. Concerns about their relationships. What happens when we die as parents? Will my child be okay? So a support group is very helpful for parents.
Talking about long-term situations, what does happen to these kids when they grow up? What's the long-term prognosis for people with this neurological issue?
Some adults with Asperger's syndrome are extremely successful. It's been said that people like Mozart and Thomas Jefferson and even Bill Gates have this syndrome. My goodness, how successful are those people? So many people with this disorder are very successful. They tend to find jobs that require few social contacts, like our computer geeks, people who have super high tech knowledge, who are really involved in one specific area and very few social contacts. They can be very successful. But not all people with this disorder are successful. Some of them are underemployed. Some of them can't get jobs. Some of them just don't have the skills to connect with an employer and so never get the job and never get the opportunity. So it's extremely difficult.
So would you say that adults hearing this with Asperger's should get themselves a counseling situation so that they can learn the skills that they need?
I think a counseling situation or a group with people who have a similar disorder that they can feel they're not alone out there and work on this together. And the other hard part is relationships. When you speak about growing up, many of these people have a hard time with it. As they get older, they would like to have relationships. They would like to be married. Some, not all of them, but they would like to have that kind of part of their life where they can have another person in there. Most relationships for people with the syndrome tend to be more around common interests and intellectual pursuits rather than romance and sexual discovery. They tend to be more intellectual. But people do have relationships. And I think the important part is for these people to learn to read the social cues that their partner gives them, that they think that maybe their partner feels the same way as they do. If they really feel very warm and in love with somebody, they need to be able to pick up the cue if their partner isn't feeling the same thing at that moment.
I would think that sometimes a very caring friend or partner, or potential partner, would, in understanding the person that's being dealt with, be able to help with that. In other words, help the other person, help the person with Asperger's develop that kind of communication by saying, I need to know how you feel, but you need to know how I feel.
That situation would be perfect. But I want to tell you one great thing about relationships with people. They rarely are unfaithful and rarely squander money. There are a lot of good things about people with Asperger's. They might be a little tight-fisted, and that could be a problem. But these are not people who go out and seek other relationships. And that's one very positive.
yes, it is.
I think what I'm saying is that people with Asperger's can develop normal relationships because the normal range is so wide. And it's just important for the relationship to be, the person in that relation to be loving and tolerant and understanding.
And you're speaking of this in such a positive tone because you continually have been referring to help and getting the help and getting the guidance and learning the skills. And if one can learn those things, then indeed one can overcome some of the handicaps.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. So I just want to say one last thing. I have heard of people with this disorder, adult males, who cannot find a partner and have a hard time with that. And they go overseas to countries where they are able to travel and find somebody who, because of cultural differences or maybe even financial circumstances, are less concerned about their social eccentricities. Perhaps a cultural difference doesn't play up the social difficulties, and they have been able to find partners and mates and come back. And with some work, these have been successful. So just another interesting piece.
That is.
The world is an interesting place. Well, we wish that we could carry this discussion longer because this has been so interesting, but I think we need to wrap it up with our resources, and we would like to ask for any resources that you could give to our listeners who'd like to find out more and learn more about Asperger's syndrome.
I'm going to discuss some books that are more for parents than technical books. There's one by Tony Atwood, which is called Asperger's Syndrome, A Guide for Parents and Professionals. That's a very good one. There's one by Bollick, Asperger's Syndrome and Adolescence, which helps preteens and teens get ready for the real world. For a mother, Eating an Artichoke, A Mother's Perspective on Asperger's Syndrome. And it's by Fling, F-L-I-N-G is the author. There's one for siblings of people with autism by Harris. It's called Siblings of Children with Autism, A Guide for Families. There are also some websites which might be of use. There's a online Asperger's Syndrome Information and Support Group called OASIS. And perhaps if you go on the internet, you can find the website.
Okay. That's OASIS.
OASIS. You got
it.
And there's an Asperger's Disorder homepage. There's also a website for people with autism and Asperger's Syndrome. And another one called Oops, Wrong Planet Syndrome, which provides personal information and an informative perspective on Asperger's syndrome. So there are several websites. Perhaps if you go and look up, you can find the websites. I don't know if that's helpful.
For something that was unknown so many years ago when people still had this problem but didn't have the tools for diagnosis and help, it's so nice to know that there's so much around now that parents can use for help. Beulah Levy, thank you so much for being with us and helping us to see this particular syndrome in an optimistic way, but to be very well informed. Thanks so very much.
Thank you for asking me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 223. Tell us if you can what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Washington, D.C. with Kids is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.